This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, Tee Shao Eek. Tomorrow is Chinese New Year, and for those of you celebrating, you'll be ushering in the Year of the Rat with your family, with lots of festivities and, of course, food. Speaking of food, no Chinese New Year celebration would be complete without the reunion dinner and the goodies that we feast on during the open houses that we visit. A while back, we spoke to culinary expert Amy Bay on this show to find out more about traditional CNY dishes and the unique cuisines of the different dialect groups in Malaysia. She also shared some recipe ideas for a healthy, well-balanced Chinese New Year feast. Here's a look back at that conversation between Amy and former Bigger Picture presenter Angeline Chong.
Now, with the Hokkien's, Cantonese and Teochews and Hakkas, I'm sure every different clan has their own delicacies. Can you give us some examples, Amy, with your vast experience?
The Hokkien, when during Chinese New Year, they don't cook much. In fact, they would love to sit around and have steamboat, because I remember my mom and my aunt, when we were young, we used to sit around having steamboat. Then my mom loves to cook nyonya dishes, because we are from Penang, okay. So Penang nyonya dishes, they will love it.
And how about the Hakkas and the Teochews? Anything outstanding?
I'm not very familiar, but what I know is I've got a friend who will usually do lui cha. Then she says man dishes are very important, braised dishes, lots of pork as well.
So pork actually cuts across all clans.
Right.
Now, of these examples, what are distinct flavors of each and what makes them specialty dishes? For example, you mentioned the lui cha, a mixture of vegetables and rice. Basically, what kind of flavors do they bring out? Is it more the mixture, or the bitter, the sweet?
I've taken ones where I say that, well, your dishes look very bland. They say, are you sure? Because I come from Penang, so I love, spicy food.
But do you think that is specific to Chinese cooking, where flavors are somewhat minimized, or is that just people being more health conscious these days?
Yeah, nowadays people are very health conscious. So I've spoken to many. They say, hey, Amy, I love steaming dishes nowadays, because steaming is something that's very healthy. Health conscious people will go for steaming dishes.
Well, here's where you weave your magic for us. I'd like you to recommend some recipes based on these ingredients I'll be giving you. So let's just have a bit of excitement here in the studio now.
All right.
Okay, let's start with rice. The Chinese love rice. What are special rice dishes you can tell us how to prepare in case they are wondering what to cook for Chinese New Year?
Okay, Chinese New Year, for the Cantonese, they would do lap mi fan, that is, where they get lots of this, the salt cured duck, lap ngap. Okay. Then you will have lap cheong, lots of it. Lap cheong, you have pork as well as the pork liver. Then, as usual, you have this ngaku again that comes in, because once a year only you have that ingredient to cook rice together with all these ingredients. To me, my family, we don't eat that much of lap mei fan. But I've been invited to friends' places and they serve this rice. Not bad, because I do a lot of nyonya cooking, that is why.
I'm nyonya too. Well, maybe you can... any nyonya rice dishes?
Nyonya rice dishes. My mom used to do
yam rice.
But it's very simple. As I told you, nyonyas, we eat a lot of steamboat dishes during reunion. That's where we sit together. Then we really laugh and have a real good time over a pot of steaming hot soup.
And not to mention a lot of spice as well.
Yes.
Now, moving on to noodles, mee sua or anything else? Can you stun us with some noodle dishes?
If it's not during Chinese New Year Eve, any day during Chinese New Year, my mom would love to cook a type of dish that is called longevity noodles.
That's mee sua.
Just
not mee sua.
Noodles.
Okay, so what's the difference between longevity noodles and mee sua?
Mee sua would be like, the soft, plain noodle sort of thing. In fact, I do have up this recipe of hers that is during on the eighth day, where where they pai tin kong, that night we have sweet soup, then mee sua adds into that soup. So that is where you serve after the press.
And how about vegetables? Now, the Chinese love their vegetables, their greens. We've got siu pak choy, we've got leek. Leek is my personal favorite. Mm-hmm. So do you have any special recipes to recommend?
Coming to vegetables, I used to cook a lot of these vegetables, such as juhu cha.
Turnips.
Turnips, yes. Turnips, carrots. Then there's where leek comes in, dried cuttlefish. Yao Yi.
Would you have a special combination of that recipe that you're talking about? Not just the raw ingredients like Yu Hu Cha, for example, you said turnips, mm-hmm. but any special way of preparing the turnips?
The last I used to do this radish or this turnips together with yisang, it comes up very well. That's good. Where Chinese New Year, you have lots of it before Chinese New Year, up to almost the 15th day.
A lot of Chinese people, especially the Teochews, if I'm not wrong, are soupy people.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay, so any special soups that you'd recommend, which would be quite hearty and also healthy? I understand the Chinese are very very particular about their soup.
Yeah, as for soups, my mom used to teach us to do, you know, that tu to teng.
What's that?
You know, it's like pig's stomach. It sounds a bit awful when you talk about pig's stomach, but it's cooked with chicken. Then we have a fish maw, lots of water chestnuts in it, ginkgo nuts. Then it tastes spicy because lots of peppers added in. You know, the white peppercorns crushed. Then you boil the soup until you get the real flavor. You can use that soup for steamboat as well.
How long does one need to brew the soup?
It takes about an hour.
Is it true, Amy, that the longer you brew the soup, the better it tastes and also the more nutrients it's supposed to have? Or is that not necessarily true?
Not necessary. 1 hour is more than enough.
1 hour. Standard for any soup.
Yeah, yeah. It depends. For this soup, it's about an hour. For normal soups, like what you cook at home, let's say nowadays when you have the slow cooker, you just put in the slow cooker, you take about maybe 3-4 hours.
This is about the longest, right, for soup, because the rest that we mentioned, like the rice and the noodles and also the vegetables, it's all mainly stir-fried. Am
yes,
I right?
Mainly stir-fried, yep.
Now about meat. Could you recommend some other dishes? I also understand that, well, the Chinese love their fish as well.
Fish, because they will say nian nian you yi, surplus okay. every year. So fish is steamed, the simplest way to bring out the flavor.
Steam it.
Yes, steam.
In any specific way, do you think with the soy sauce or is it with...
Very light soy sauce, oyster sauce, a bit of sugar, salt, pepper, sesame oil. That would be the gravy. Then you steam your fish. You add some ham choy or salted vegetable. Then the plums, you know, that sin mui.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of ginger. Then you steam your fish plain. Put this over. Then with the sauce, draped over it.
Understand from the ingredients, it would be a little bit on the sour side. Is there any rationale to this?
Chinese New Year, you'll be eating a lot of oily food, so this dish itself would sort of be something that is very simple and plain to make your palate not that more like choked up.
So it's not so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of overwhelming and oily, balancing things up, the Chinese believe that in the properties of cooling and heaty, yin and yang, and to the extent planning their meal with a balance of sweet, sour, salty, bitter and pungent. You know, the Chinese are famous for this. Well, is that how you would recommend families to balance their menu? Now, if they'd like to come up perhaps with an all-encompassing menu for one evening, Amy, now I really ask you to work your magic and creativity here. What would a full, balanced, simple menu be for a typical Chinese family?
If I were to cook that meal, I would just buy lots of vegetables, then have just a little bit of meat, stir-fried, then with oyster sauce, abalone sauce, chicken stock, then just stir fry it. I think that would come up. That would come up a beautiful taste for the meat, for that dish.
I think you also mentioned there are some ingredients we only eat once a year during Chinese New Year, like clams. We also have the mushrooms.
Okay, nowadays, they have lots of fresh mushrooms around, shimeji mushrooms, eringi mushrooms, lots of them in the market. So lately, I've been playing about with mushrooms. So I find that I would do away with a lot of meat because for health reasons. So I myself, I try to do away with a lot of meat because it's simple to cook.
I see. Simple answer as well.
Yeah, right.
Okay, now the Chinese also love to drink tea. Would you say, Amy, that tea would be that one thing to complete the meal? And the beauty of tea is we can cook with it as well. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've done with one soupy dish with tea, longjiang tea. What you do is just you steep your tea in hot water After that, then you take the water together with the chicken. You may add some herbs and you brew that dish. Okay. It comes up beautiful.
Wow, chicken with tea.
Yeah.
And
I tried longjiang tea, jasmine tea, all the good tea that you can find in the market.
Okay, and is it really that simple to prepare?
Yes, it's very simple. It depends whether you're cooking for a big family or your small family. For a small family, you can take about, let's say, a tablespoon of this tea, steep it in about 1 liter of water, put aside for about 10 minutes. Then with the whole tea, you know, the tea drink, then you put it in your double boiler, add the chicken, add some yuk chuk, kei chi, red dates, then you just double boil it.
That was culinary expert Amy Bay speaking to former Bigger Picture presenter Angeline Chong. And Amy, of course, is best known for her recipes on Chinese and Peranakan cooking. You can look for that full conversation by searching our podcast on our website or on the BFM app. When we come back from the break, we'll look at the flip side of Chinese New Year feasting, burning those calories. We'll be revisiting a segment with personal trainer Karen Xia on how to recover from all that binging we've been doing. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Health and Living and I'm T. Xiaoyik. It's the eve of Chinese New Year, and many of you are preparing for the reunion dinner as I speak. Whether it's yisang and steamboat tonight, or the endless snacking on kueh kapit, pineapple tarts, and kueh bangkit when you go visiting, it can feel like a non-stop cycle of eating for the next 15 days. But what happens when Chinese New Year is over? That's when we strap on our shoes and start that exercise regime, whether it's back to the gym or hitting the jogging trail, perhaps. But a fitness regime tends to cost a lot, especially for those of us starting from scratch. And if you've already spent a lot, you know, giving out ang paos and organizing Chinese New Year festivities, how do you get fit without hurting your finances? I dug into our podcast archives to find this conversation that we had not too long ago with personal trainer Karen Xia about keeping fit on a shoestring budget. Here's Meera Sivasodhi speaking to Karen.
Of course, we are all experiencing the rising cost of living. And is the healthy lifestyle becoming too costly?
I would say a lot of people think it is, although it doesn't have to be. People think that to get fit and to get healthy, you need to invest a lot of money. It always starts with an investment. They think that you need to you invest now so that you save on medical costs later, for example. But it really doesn't have to be. And I think that as we talk later on today, I think we will see that you don't really need to put in a big capital to actually get fitter and get healthier.
Do you see more people pulling back?
Definitely,
in
yes.
In terms of gym memberships and
gym
stuff?
Gym memberships, definitely. Corporate companies seem to be cutting down on these sort of recreational health sort of activities. People who used to seek personal training, definitely cutting back. They either cut it down to half the frequency or they just say, okay, we'll try to do it on our own. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sort of thing.
And by cutting down, that does that necessarily mean you are spending less, really? I mean, in the long run, what are the effects? So, and will it in the long run cost us more, actually?
I think that it really depends on how well you can cope with doing it on your own, like those people who say that they want to do it on their own. I sincerely believe that they can. If they were committed to it, they watch what they eat and they watch their activities. But I think that in the long run, some people actually do end up spending more, and there are certain things that that I can talk about to show how you may, without you realizing it, spend more instead of save more in the long run. So, for example, people like to chase like packages. So gyms or fitness centers tend to come up with packages saying, oh, you can buy this bulk for this bulk number of sessions for this price and things like that. And people like to buy things like this. But whether or not they can commit to all the sessions, whether they can fit it all in their schedule, that's, you know, it's up to them to prove that. Another thing is wearable devices, a lot of wearables these days. People think that by quitting the gym and buying these wearable devices, they can save money in the long run. But whether or not they use it properly, whether it's really functional for them, that is also another thing that they need to think about. So things like that, definitely, I think, may not necessarily be money-saving in the long term.
So give us an idea of how to take on a good workout without sort of breaking our budget.
It really depends on your goals and targets. So I'm assuming that everybody just wants to
lose weight,
keep fit, you know. And if that's your purpose, then start off by just finding a space in your house or around your neighborhood that you know that you can use. Dedicate that space to your workout. And then just get yourself good, you know, running shoes or good whatever sport shoes that that suits you. Oh, before that, talk to people who are already exercisers, like frequent exercise, regular exercises, and they'll tell you what to wear and what not to wear, what to buy and what not to buy. So you don't go around trying different pairs of shoes or trying different clothing to see which one suits you. So you go straight to what works best and then get into it. Just, you don't really need a lot of equipment to get fit.
You don't?
No.
But for those of us who are comfortable with using machines, I mean, what do you do then?
If it's machines, to me, it's for strength building, for muscle toning. If that's the case, you probably only need a form of weights. So you either invest in a pair of dumbbells. I would suggest something like 4 to 5 kgs for someone who's starting out. A pair of dumbbells about that weight. Or if you are slightly more advanced, you can go to maybe 6, 8 kgs or even 10 kgs. And then you can use these dumbbells or these weights to actually help you with all your workouts. You don't really need a machine to do it.
Okay, so I need to be convinced. I need to have you, because I depend very much on machines
because
I find it stabilizes the rest of your body while you work that one particular area out.
Yeah, isolation.
Yes, and this whole body, using your body weight thing to exercise and get fit. I don't know. It's hard for me. So probably with some proper guidance, it might be a lot easier. There's always this assumption that free means not as effective. What if I don't want to pay for fitness activities? Is there anything that can be done for free that is possibly effective and sustainable?
There are a lot of things that can be done for free, but I personally, I think that just for that accountability, it is good if you actually pay a little bit or at least invest just a little bit, just so that you are accountable for what is it that you're investing in, either a class, even if it's just like, for example, 30 ringgit for one class or 25 ringgit for one class, whatever your package may be, that brings you to do that exercise even more than if, let's say, it's completely free. Chances are you might fall off the wagon very soon. So I think, yeah, there are a lot of things you can do for free. You can go for a run, you can go swimming, you can, you know, just do run up and down the stairs in your house. But whether or not we commit to these things, I think it's better if you don't have that sort of discipline or if you don't have that sort of commitment, it's better that if you pay just something small, like for a class, pay for, you know, a group exercise class, at least you have the accountability.
If you're purchasing training equipment for long-term investment, Karen, and especially if you're just starting out on a fitness regime, what sort of equipment should we purchase? You've spoken about buying simple weights initially, but anything else that we should be looking at?
Okay, so I think cardio machines should not be purchased unless you stay in an area where you absolutely have no grounds to run on or no parks near where you work or things like that. If it's absolutely inconvenient for you to go out, then maybe having a cross trainer or a treadmill as your first investment would be good. But otherwise, a skipping rope is my go-to cardio equipment. I always tell people, get a skipping rope. If you don't know how to skip, even better, you'll learn how to skip. You burn lots of calories learning how to skip. Otherwise, you can always, you know, learn to dance or learn to do something like that. That is fun. You can do it at home. Weights, I would say, is quite important, especially once you are in your 30s, 40s, you want to actually do a bit more weight-bearing exercises just to strengthen your bones and your joints. So you really definitely need to have a pair of weights, a pair of dumbbells, or if you are creative, you can make your own weights, please do so.
Mm-hmm.
A mat would be really good, any sort of mat. It doesn't have to be a very expensive yoga mat or anything like that. Just as long as it protects you from getting any chafing or anything. Like, I know some people, even like myself, I can't do crunches on the hard floor because I have a tailbone which hurts me. So things like that, just as long as you have a mat that you can bring around anywhere and you can put it on the floor and you can do your workouts, that would be really good.
How do you keep the regime, fitness regime, interesting?
So I would,
and we get bored very quickly.
Yes, we do. And especially if we're in the four walls of our home or our room, we do get bored very, very quickly. So my suggestion, and I know not many people may agree with me, but I think that it is actually good to have a mirror and actually work out in front of the mirror. And if you can see that you are changing, your body tone is changing, you are actually progressing, then I think that actually spurs you on. Also, keep a journal. This is quite old school. Not many people do this, but keeping a fitness journal or a health journal is actually very good and very, it helps us to stay on the program and stay motivated.
What should we be documenting in that journal?
Things like what you did, what sort of workouts you did, if there is any...
How much detail?
It's completely up to you. You could just say, today is legs day. Or you could say, today I did 20 squats, 25 lunges. It's completely up to you. I would say how you feel after that. Maybe you have a muscle pull or you feel completely exhausted. These are things that you should jot down. If you like, you can also write how you look. So having actually selfies actually do work. Because you can browse back and you can look at all these selfies and say, hey, this is how I looked 2 months ago and this is how I look like now.
So they aren't just for your Facebook profile.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a good function for selfies.
There is, actually.
Yeah. Would you recommend sports such as badminton or basketball over going to the gym for fitness? Which is better?
If you can play basketball or badminton and if that's what you enjoy, it is definitely way better than going to the gym and not doing anything. I've seen people who go to the gym and they go and spend 1 hour in the gym, but they are only at the machines or on the equipment like 5 or 10 minutes. And they spend the rest of the time just chit-chatting and drinking all the soft drinks that are there. So, yes, if you love sport, and I think sport is one of the things that actually do keep people motivated, because you obviously are not going to do this alone. You're going to have a sparring partner, a buddy, a training team, a training buddy to go with. And these things are also just like paying a fee. These are people that you will feel accountable for if you fail to show up. So yes, most definitely, I would say if you do play a sport, bring that up again.
Okay. Going back to the journal, should you be recording what you eat?
If you can, yes, most definitely. At least for a week, I would say. And after that, if you feel that you know how to control from then on, then you can stop. But if you find, and most of the time, my clients, they find that after recording for a week, they tend to continue after that because it helps them. It helps them to see what exactly they're putting in, what they're taking in. And there are so many apps on our mobile devices these days that can help us with counting all the calories. Not extremely in detail, not extremely accurate, but at least it gives you a rough figure.
Just an average.
Yeah.
You want to go through with me again the calorie requirement for a female adult and a male adult?
Yeah. So for women, you know, just normal 30 to 50 years old women, you should actually be taking in about 1,200 to 1,500 calories. That should be if you want to maintain or if you want to lose a bit of weight. If for guys, it's closer to 2,000 calories. If you are someone who trains a lot or does a lot of muscle work, then you might want to increase that to maybe increase that by an extra 200 or 300 calories just to account for all the muscle tears, muscle wear and tears and joint, you know, the usage of your joints and things like that.
You know, Karen, 1,200 to 1,500 for a woman mm-hmm. between the ages of 30 and 50, what will that comprise? Just an example.
It would be...
Just to give us an idea.
Yeah, so if you are talking about, say, 4 to 5 meals a day, which is what I would recommend, it would be breakfast in the morning would be, say, toast with maybe just a little bit of butter, a drink, and then you eat sometime between breakfast and lunch, a snack, say, some crackers, or if you have nuts or a fruit or something like that. Lunchtime would be your usual lunch, any usual Malaysian lunch, just cut back on the carbohydrates. So I know Malaysians love their rice and we love our noodles and things like that. But these are actually very energy dense. And if we cut back on the carbohydrates of our meals and we add on more vegetables and protein, then that will be, you know, a good enough meal for one person. And then I do suggest that people eat between lunch and dinner, because most of the time between lunch and dinner is too long a gap. Say if people eat at 12 or 1, most people don't go back home until 8 plus after work, and that's too long a time. So please have something to eat sometime maybe about 4 or 5 o'clock, a bun or toast if you like, or even just any sort of small biscuit, snack or things like that. It's fine, completely fine. And then you eat again for dinner, your usual. I would definitely say eat much less for dinner, because after that you're going to bed. Everyone is different. It really depends on the type of work that you do, whether you're sitting most of the time or whether you actually do walk around quite a bit and you actually do quite a bit of movement in whatever that you do.
Okay. Is there such a thing called reaching a plateau in exercise?
You want to mix things up a bit. You actually are in the same boat as a lot of people. A lot of people actually find that they reach this plateau. And I would really suggest that you shake things up a bit. You try something different. Try a class, for example. Or rather than just going at a steady state on the treadmill, do intervals. Go for a slightly faster run and then a slower run, and a faster run and a slower run. So you can mix it up. Some days you can do steady state, just jogging at the pace that you're comfortable with for 45 minutes or an hour, up to you. And some days you do a short 20-minute but interval run. So you go for a slightly faster pace for, say, 2 minutes, and you come back down to a slower pace for 1 minute, something like that. I think that if you are very used to that routine, it's most likely not going to be very effective anymore, because our body is a very adaptable, it's very adaptable to anything that you throw at it. So it gets adapted to any sort of exercise within just 5 or 6 times that you've done it. So we always need to challenge ourselves, always need to mix things up. So go outside, maybe take on cycling or take on hiking just once or twice a week, just to shake things up a bit. And you can still do the things that you do, just add on other things in between.
Okay, so shake it up a little
bit.
Supplements, do you believe in that?
I do believe in taking the essentials, the multivitamins, the vitamin C's, things like that. But I know that there are way, way more. There's a whole smorgasbord of supplements out there in the shops. And I really think that you need to do a lot more research and read into it, whether or not they really do help you out. Or are you just eating, drinking a lot of money and just passing them out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So read up. Typical grocery bag, what does that look like?
So if you want to go shopping and you want to start all this whole clean eating thing, first of all, fill up your grocery bag with lots of fresh vegetables. I would expect almost half your bag to be filled with vegetables and fruits, if you can carry that much. Eggs, if you do eat eggs. If you don't eat meat, then I would say take a bit more eggs. Or if you don't eat eggs as well, then take more vegetables that are high in protein as well. So like beans, the flat beans or long beans, that sort of thing. Broccoli is very good as well. If you do eat meat, then make sure that the meat is fresh. Have very little to none of tins and canned food. We want to stay away from as much processed food as possible. And don't be afraid to reach for you know, like oatmeal crackers, some things like that. I know people say that they tend to binge on snacks when they're working because it's easy, it's readily available. They can just put a whole pack of crackers in their drawers. But I think that if you reach for the right one, so like, say, like I said, an oatmeal cracker, or read the ingredients, make sure it doesn't have sugar, then that's fine. Just grab a few of that nuts, it would be good. So yeah, that would be your grocery bag.
Yeah. All right, then. What's your message, Karen, on fitness on a shoestring budget? How what would you like to leave us with?
I would like to drum in the fact that you should start a journal. I think that this time more than ever, we should document what we do, and then we can look back and be really... That's one thing I realized when I was training for the Ironman, that documenting my journey was actually... It was very fulfilling. It was very satisfying. And
keeps
I think
you motivated
it
as
does.
Well.
It definitely does keep me motivated. So I think that we can all do this. It's definitely possible to still maintain or get fitter without actually breaking the bank. Like you said, keep a journal, decide what you want to do, how you want to do it, and then no better time like today.
That was personal trainer Karen Xia giving us some tips and advice on getting fit and staying healthy without overextending your financial credit. Good advice all around for starting the new year. If you want to listen to that full podcast, search for Karen Xia on our website or on our BFM app. That's all we have for you this Chinese New Year Eve. I'm Ti Xiaoyik, wishing you 新年快乐, 万事如意, and of course, since this is Health and Living, 身体健康. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.